Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to the 227th edition of Money Matters, your economic forum, entitled, Where Do We Go From Here? My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thank you for joining me today. Keep in mind the discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on this show are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about you. It's about money. As money doesn't matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. Well, today I don't get to come on the radio and tell you the market is crashing. It's the second show in a row. I don't have to do that. And I'm glad. I was getting tired of bringing you bad news. I thought it was me. Nah. We've been on this airway for 2005. What's that, 11 years? Many times I've been on the airs and markets are up, so I can't feel too... cause and effect. I'm not the cause of it, as you know. So, yeah, markets, we always talked about 16,000 being a key level. The markets are at 16,439.73 today at 12:10 p.m. and 19 seconds Pacific Standard Time in the year of our Lord. And so, there are various resistant points and support points that analysts look at. You know, if Dow bounces around 16,000 and goes up over it and down below it and up over it and down below it and bounces it around, we call that a resistance support point. If the market goes down to 16,000, then we might call that a support point. If the market goes up to 16,000 and tries to punch through it, we call that a resistance point. So, we are at 16,439. Where do we go from here? That's the big question. Have you seen negative balances in your portfolio? Have you been making money since January? Very good questions. I think I know the answers. But not necessarily so, nor it might be necessarily necessary. But that depends always, of course, on what we select to put in our investment portfolio, right? If you have the necessary means to select the right selections, I guess I could say, then you'd be more fortified than somebody who makes the wrong choices. I think that's a given. Use the wrong things in a recipe, you get a bad cake. Use the right things, and it tastes delicious. cook at the right time, add them at the right time, and you get a delicious cake. Do the opposite, not so delicious. So we will try to catch you up on what's going on, give you some insight. Where do we go from here? And then wrap up the show. Phone calls are always welcome. 530-265-9073. No. 530-265-9555. There you go. 530-265-9555. You can call me. Ask me a question. So, what's going on in the markets? Well, it's has been a interesting 2016. So out from Bloomberg last week, China moved to support its sinking stock market again as state-controlled funds bought equities and securities. Regulator single ban on major investments. In other words, they had some bans in place. They were basically trying to control the market from falling. Government funds in China actually purchased local stocks a couple of weeks ago after the CSI index. It's not a TV show. It's China stock market index. Tumbled 7%. The S&P and the Dow have come down from 18,003 to about 16,004. Where it is today, down to those 15,003, I think. So that was a pretty big whopper. We do a little math, and we just take the recent highs and lows. And if we divide 15,300 divided by 18,300, we get a 17% market crash. And today, we take this existing Dow level, advanced math. I will be told there will be no advanced math on this show. 16,431 divided by 18,300 roughly, and the Dow is down about 10%. So bear market is generally regarded as down 20%. So if we take the 18,300, I was told there would be no advanced math today, Mark. Well, there is. Dow would have to be about 14,640 if I did my calculations right. Let's do that one more time. 14,640 would be a 20% correction, which would put us into a bear market in the eyes of some analysts. So China is trying to prop up their market. Their market has been fairly massacred. And the U.S. market also started the year with the worst fall in 80 years ever. Ever. Worries over the falling Chinese economy, the rising tensions in the Middle East because of Saudi Arabia's execution of Iranian cleric. They cut his head off. Oh, dude. And weak economic data was likely the cause. Likely. Could have been the federal increase in rates. The end of quantitative easing, just a market that has just gone up too fast, too far, who knows? Next day, Citigroup called for lightening up on U.S. stocks for the medium term, saying downgraded domestic holdings to an underweight status. While Citigroup isn't calling for a definitive end to the U.S. bull market, it is telling clients that better opportunities can be elsewhere. It was another bank, I think it was UBS, don't hold me on that, one of the banks said sell everything. That was their opinion. I don't know about that, but everybody has an opinion like something else we know, right? Oh, here it was. New Year's Eve, RBC Capital Markets lowered its target for the Standard & Poor's from 2225 to 2300. Well, they're wrong. Right now it's at 1919. Although the markets are off to a questionable start, I think we can say that. Some positives remain for investors who consider. Consider this. Unemployment data is improving in the U.S. in 2016 as an election year. I agree with the second one, although I wrote the first one too. You could look at improving unemployment data with a jaundiced eye. The election year, both political parties obviously not wanting to be responsible for a bleak stock market going forward into an important election cycle. Obviously, you're a congressman. No matter which side of the aisle you're on, if things are terrible, you might get voted out. Pressure could be put on the Federal Reserve to hold off raising interest rates any further. They're supposed to be immune from government interference, but do you really believe that? It is said, not necessarily true. So goes the year, so go the stock markets, so go the start of the year. In other words, if January is down, the market will be down the rest of the year. That is a theory. Nothing is written in stone. So the first weeks of 2016, indeed, man, we saw a record-setting fall for the start of the year. Investors ran for the exits, and each new day seemingly brought more pain in portfolio balances. Because, you know, when the stock market goes down, it means people are selling. People are selling. I was going to ask the stockbroker a long time ago, one of my stocks was going down. Why is it going down? More sellers than buyers, Mark. That's what it means. More people are selling than buying. Again, theories abound. Sell-off from the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. Plunge in oil prices. My personal favorite. January is now, of course, behind us. And the question remains, where do we go from here in the rest of 2016? We seem to have a meandering market now. Is it bouncing around ready to run? Or is it bouncing around ready to continue its fall? Market pundits, the cheerleaders, offer up improving economic stats as proof the economy is improving. And if so, the markets will probably eventually reflect that. However, recent months have showed a slowing of the economy in many areas by figures put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. If that is true, the market should reflect that eventually as well. Rising deficits and a halt to the sequester cuts. Remember those? The mandatory cuts because it couldn't reach the budget agreement? They were mandatory for 10 years. Mandatory. Well, they did away with those a couple of months ago in the new budget. They were supposed to be mandatory for 10 years. We got away with two of them. But now they stopped that. U.S. dollar strength. Of course, U.S. dollar has been strengthening in the last year. And that has hurt exports. And we covered why that is in many shows before, and we're not going to cover that again. But when U.S. dollar strengthens, what we sell, the U.S. sells to other countries, goes down. Price of oil still in the doldrums, although it kind of had a nice little rebound last couple of days. The fact that we see many contradictions in the minds of Wall Street, up one day, down the next. Lower oil prices are helping put money in the pockets of consumers. Yet, these same low prices are touted to be causing economic pain in companies that deal in oil and to the financial companies that lent money to those particular oil companies. Some of the banking stocks, it's pretty amazing, some of the banking stocks are lower than they were during the crisis. Wow. How's that for news? That's interesting, huh? Some banking financial stocks are lower than they were during the crisis? What does that tell you? The thinking of low oil prices, although good for us, is that oil producers will have a hard time meeting their obligations, in other words, paying their loans, because they make money on oil, and if oil drops below to the price where they produce it at, they lose money, and how do you pay your bills when you're losing money? So we'll see if that will bleed over to the markets in general. A bond crisis. Remember, a bond is just an IOU. That's all it is. You buy a bond from me, I owe you money. I owe you. There are currents and cross currents. They are pulling markets to and fro, as you can see. And indeed, the next 2 months, if not the entire year, maybe, could be in for a volatile ride. And the best thing investors could do, in my opinion only, maintain enough to positions and equities to participate in market rallies while maintaining a healthy cash position to have some dry powder to scoop up better buys later on if the markets continue to go down. Moderation in all things and diversification in all things might be the order of the day. And I don't think diversification myself is holding your entire net worth in the stock market. You know, other things like real estate and bonds and I don't know, a lot of investors hold all sorts of different things. You know, the more things you hold, the more diversified you are, right? That goes without saying. Job creation. Well, job creation 3 weeks ago. Missed expectations by a pretty decent amount. Created 151,000 new jobs against an expectation of 190,000 jobs. Now, it used to be 250,000 new jobs created was regarded as stable. That's the way it used to be 5, 6, 7 years ago. I know, because I used to do the show, and they used to say anything over 250,000 jobs would keep up with the amount of babies that are coming into the world, putting on their ties and going to Starbucks on their way to work. That 250,000 figure has disappeared in the media. I don't know why that is. Now, it's a lower rate. We get 200,000 jobs, people say that's great. Well, 10 years ago, 250,000 job people would say that stunk. We need 250 to just keep up the growing population. That 151,000 new jobs created in 3 weeks ago was the lowest monthly reading in 2 years. Yee. The good news is unemployment sank to 4.9%, the lowest level since right before the crisis. ShadowStats.com, who we interviewed here years ago. ShadowStats.com puts out statistics on employment and inflation the way they were used to be calculated. They used to be calculated differently. Did you know that? Employment, inflation, GDP, GNP, what it used to be called, gross national product, used to be calculated a different way. So it's hard to compare against the Depression or the recessions of 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 90 years ago, because we measure it differently. So anytime you see a comparison, well, unemployment is not as bad as it was in the Depression. Well, that's because we measure it differently. We measure it more positively. Now, with the oil in the doldrums, I found it interesting, out from CNBC, President Obama proposed a new tax, another new tax. He wants to tax a $10 barrel on oil. Now, if oil is $30, he slams on a $10 tax. What's that, 33% tax? Ouch. Now, I was in the impression that the government was after the oil companies for excessive profits. So why does the government want to put $10 more on the barrel if they're concerned about the price of gasoline? He wants to use his $10 a barrel tax to pay for clean energy, high-speed rail, and other transportation projects. Sounds good. I mean, all taxes always sound good, right? What are you going to use the tax for? Well, we're gonna blanket down the drain. No, they're not going to tell you that. There's always something. Well, we're going to build schools, and we're going to build this, and we're going to build that. You know, I tell you what, if I wanted to tax you, I would spend all night thinking of all the things that you want to hear. And then I would say, my tax is going to buy blank, 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 blank. And I would probably get more than 50% of the vote. They never come out and say, the new taxes are going to be so we can blank it away. New. So for a new $10 barrel oil tax, they're going to pay for clean energy, high-speed rail, and other transportation projects. Sounds good, right? So do you buy that? Probably half of you out there say, yeah, that sounds good. The other half saying, no, I don't want any more taxes. The grand old party, the Republicans, say that the request is dead on arrival. This analyst, who you're listening to because you have nothing better to do, agrees what America needs is more spending money to get the economy going. And any new gas tax, like most taxes, will be passed on to you, making it even harder for you contractors and painters and people driving around in large trucks to make a living. And since oil goes into everything you buy, almost, it would likely increase the price of everything you buy, from the food that is transported to the plastic in your car. And on a note of, I can't believe he did that, bad boy touring pharmaceutical CEO Martin Shkreli, who jacked up a prescription price of a drug on his company bought from another company from $10 to over $700 a dose. He raised it from $10 to $700 overnight. Was called in front of Congress to explain himself. Shkreli, if I'm pronouncing that right, took the fifth. Refused to answer almost all questions under the auspice that he might incriminate himself. And And in a blatant display of disrespect, general ignorance, and in my case, I would also add, the most blatant display of idiocy I've seen from somebody in a long time, left the inquiry and immediately tweeted that the congressional members of Congress were a bunch of imbeciles. Dude, do you think there's any ramifications for that? No, not at all. The IRS will never come back to me. Well, he had been arrested for, I don't know, something, some malfeasance. I would say, Martin, my man, don't be surprised if they call you back for more after that idiotic move, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the IRS crawl right up your skirt today. That's what they do. Bad things happen to people that exhibit such stupidity. And I'm referring to the tweet, of course. Legally, Shkreli, under the United States laws, had the legal right to jack the prescription price, all morals aside. And he had the legal right to take the fifth. He also had the legal right to call Congress a bunch of imbeciles. Whether any of that was really proper, I would say... And another sovereign entity looking for help because he can't pay its bills. Puerto Rico. Not a state, but a California territory. But a U.S. territory is looking to Congress to help out of its financial mess. It's a territory, not a state. Puerto Rico, under current law, can't seek bankruptcy in the courts. Did you know that Puerto Rican bonds were exempt from federal and state taxes? Why would that be? California bonds, certain California bonds, not all. Certain California bonds are exempt from federal taxes if you live in anywhere but California. If you live in California, certain bonds can be exempt from federal and state taxes. Puerto Rico's bonds were exempt from state and federal taxes anyway. Weird. Anyway, Puerto Rico is reeling under billions of debt from decades of overspending, obviously. And mismanagement of their finances, obviously, and now in a world of hurt, owing something like $50 billion they can't pay. Meanwhile, Argentina, who is no stranger to default and bankruptcy, is also in the overspending group of mismanaged debt and is looking to partially default or otherwise downright pay what it not pay anything. Argentina defaulted in 2002 and apparently didn't learn its lesson, and apparently its creditors didn't either. The game of chicken now is in the hands of Argentina because they play on the fact that debtors could be better off agreeing to accept amounts lower than what is owed versus them playing a game of hardball if agreements cannot be reached. Argentina could say, lop 50 cents off what I owe you, and that they could say no, and Argentina would say, okay, I'm only going to pay you 20. The grand game of clock, clock, chicken now is in play as Argentina plays on the fact that debtors could be better off by accepting what we're offering or take what I give you later. In an odd turn of events, I found this very odd. A group of banks have agreed to loan Argentina $5 billion more. Why? Banks are in things to make money. Now, I'm sure the interest rates are probably pretty good. But this country is already threatening to default. It's already told you it can't pay everything. So why would you loan them more, especially if you're not an idiot wrapped up in an imbecile? Which I assume the banks have auditors and accountants that can read. One has to think, with Argentina's history of defaults, that five banks would come forward to offer them a loan has to think a government bailout guarantee might be hidden somewhere in the woodwork. Why else would big money banks risk even more money, given Argentina is already trying to screw its current creditors? That doesn't make any sense. And a similar situation is developing in Venezuela. Boy, when it rains, it pours, huh? As they are currently printing up so much money to pay its bills, they had to use, no joke here, they had to use an outside contractor to print up and fly in three cargo planes full of currency. They're still printing paper dollars. So they couldn't keep up. They're just printing money, which you know how that ends. Just think Mexican peso. Three cargo planes full of currency to give out. Needless to say, inflation is running rampant. And this latest move, according to me, won't help matters. Low oil prices have hammered Venezuela because it gets most of its money by selling its oil reserves. Venezuela's racked up $40 billion in debt. And like Argentina, are looking for a way out by sticking it to the debtors again. With all that happening, the stock market is trying to decide which way to go. And with January being the worst start of the Dow in history, rumors of a pending recession loom. And if the markets continue down, one would be hard-pressed to argue otherwise. The big question is, will the central bank now halt its interest rate increase plans and hold back on raising rates given what has transpired in global equities? Latest Federal Reserve musing. They did come out and they said, well, we're looking at negative interest rates. That, I mean, I tell you what, man, that to me was a total left field hit in the jaw, okay? I got my jaw broken once, okay? I was a karate buff when I was in San Diego State University team, went to California finals or whatever it was. And you got to win like 7 matches to get to be champion. Wow, there's some bad dudes in there, man. I mean, some bad dudes. Well, you know, I was hot. I was young. I was fast. I was good. You know, I won my first 2 matches, if I ever believe. First 2. So I was like moving up the racks, you know. Then into the ring on my 3rd match stepped a 6-foot-something African-American. And I said, I don't care. I don't care. I'm a mean son of a bee. The bigger you are, the more I want to kick your tail. So I squared up, and he squared up, and he dropped the flag. And next thing I know, I'm looking up at the ceiling with my friend standing over me, putting a cold towel on my face, going, wow, you should have seen it. And I'm like, what? What day is it? Well, it was 6 seconds, if I recall. I squared up, he squared up, the fly dropped, and then he did a roundhouse kick and caught me right in the jaw and smashed my jaw, broke my jaw. Still to this day, I put my jaw forward and the left side sticks out. I guess if you're going to go down so you don't feel it. Well, I didn't feel a thing. I felt it later, trust me on that one. I felt it later. Man, he just caught me. I was one of those rocky slow motion things, you know, where you go and you see all the blood and the spit come out of your mouth. I'm sure that all happened. But that ended my day. It pretty much ended my next 6 weeks. So anyway, will the Federal Reserve try this knockout blow and not raise rates anymore? Because they said these negative interest rates, these are the knockout blow, okay? We had zero interest rates, ZERP. Zero interest rate policy, ZERP. Negative interest rates are called NERP, negative interest rate policy. What the heck is a negative interest rate? Well, zero interest is when you put the money in the bank and you don't get anything back, right? We hardly get anything back now, but imagine getting nothing. That's ZERP. Negative interest rates is when you put your money in the bank and you get back less than you put in. You give them $1, you get back 98 cents or whatever they decide. Now, some countries are already doing that to big investors. Big investors will buy sovereign debt, country debt, and they put the money into the central bank, and the central bank gives them less than what they put in. Now, why would they do that? Well, why would the people who deposit the money take a negative? The thinking is that if the markets were in array, and I can't put money anywhere. I mean, money, you just can't put $50 billion in a basket. You got to put it somewhere. And if you don't want to buy stocks because it's risky and you don't want to loan it out because it's risky and you just see that the whole world is crashing and you just want to put it in the bank to keep it safe, you can do that. But now the banks are saying, okay, you want to keep money here? Then we're going to penalize you, you know, 1 cent or half a cent. And the people doing it say, that's fine. I'm better to lose 1 cent than lose more in the markets. The central banks do NERP because they know that if they charge zero interest rates, negative, NERP, that the banks may, some banks may not want to put money in the bank, central banks, so they'll loan it out. That's the thinking. We'll penalize the big banks for putting money in our big central bank. And if we do that, you will loan it out. Negative interest rates. Don't believe it's ever been tried here, but the fact that Janet Yellen would bring that up, we are looking at negative interest rates. To me, knocked me off my chair. And since it was a short chair, I didn't have long to fall. I couldn't believe it. Here they just raised rates. They went from 0 to 0.25%, whatever it was. Why the heck would she be talking negative rates? They just raised them. So it indicated, at least to me, that they're concerned about something. To even suggest it right after they just raised them. What the hell? So the feds continue to push these buttons and pull levers and try to control the economy in the direction it wants it to go. We're going to pull this lever and pull this lever like the bridge on the Enterprise or like this big engineering board in front of me. I don't know how many buttons are here, and I only know how to work a few of them. There's sure a lot of buttons on these boards, man. There's hundreds of millions of buttons here. Makes me look sophisticated, but I ain't. So the Fed thinks they can push their buttons and pull levers and try to make the economy where it wants to go. They can try to steer it where they want it to go, which is kind of weird, because if they could steer it where it wanted to go, why in the heck did we have recessions and depressions and the crisis and the dot-com crash? They keep trying to steer it. They think they can steer it, although they haven't been able to steer it. Just look at the previous crisis. If they were able to steer it, they would never have steered us into that train wreck. 7 years after the worst crash since the Depression, here we sit with the markets again in the doldrums and the central banks again looking at their control panels and wondering what button they can push. The common threads of their buttons that control things, like the levers and wires, what do they control with the buttons? Well, they control a few things. They can buy distressed assets from the banks and financial institutions. You got toxic mortgages? We'll buy those for you. We'll buy them. Here's the money. Now you have money to do whatever you want to. You can loan it out. That makes it easier for businesses and individuals to borrow money. We give you a lot of money. You loan it out. People and businesses will borrow it. Although the Fed could buy distressed assets from the banks until the cows come home and continually help their banks' balance sheets, making money easier to borrow for everyone has its limitations. You give the banks $70 trillion, but they can't force people to borrow it, right? You can give the banks all the money you want. The banks could say, well, we're here to loan money, but people don't have to borrow it. The Feds don't control what you and I do. They can't control or force businesses and individuals to take on more debt, no matter how low rates go. No matter how low rates go, they can't force people to take it. Therein lies the problem we may be seeing today. We could be reaching an inflection point where the debt loads in today's societies are just too great and people just can't take on any more debt. It's a problem when debt only grows larger and larger. In 2008 and 2009, debt levels had reached critical levels on many fronts. Banks were knee-deep in debt, and so were many Americans and house mortgages, and indeed citizens around the world. Instead of allowing the world of debt to bankrupt itself and repudiate the debt and stick it to the debtors, and everybody gets rid of their debt and we start over, central banks just printed up more money to cover up the debt. Basically, they covered up the debt in the financial sectors. They mailed you a $600 check once, but most of the money went to the financial industry. We got a little bit in mortgage reduction plans and some cash for clunkers, but not everybody got that. The fact of the matter is, the lion's share of individual debt has not improved upon. So we had a debt crisis, but the debt levels are not any better now. But now the government has a lot of debt too. So before it was just us, the peoples, you guyses, as one of my sophisticated people came over to my house and said, wow, you guyses, I love your kitchen. You guyses. I don't know if that's a word. It's like the past tense of foregone. Today it is foregone, but yesterday I foregoo it. That's not right. Somebody could call me with the past tense of foregone. I think you have to use two words to get it out. You can't say, well, to yesterday I foregoo it. It's not a word. I know, it's not a word. Trying to get people to borrow money is called pushing on a string. And by pushing on a string, you can push all the money you want, but it's attached to a string, not a stick. So the Fed may be powerless to initiate any improvement in the economy, no matter what it does. It can improve bank balance sheets, but the lion's share of the real economy is the consumer. Without us, the economy may go nowhere fast. Central banks are toying with this new idea to get people spending. Although spending alone... Although spending alone probably isn't not a good idea, because if you spend money you borrowed, how does that help anything? Negative rates are trying to get people to spend instead of save. Kind of weird. Didn't your dad grow up and say, you should save your money? Well, now they're saying, we're going to give you negative rates so you don't want to save your money. We want you to spend it. That doesn't sound like a good financial plan in my house. How about yours? The key word here is lend. Aka debt. If an overabundance of debt on behalf of consumers is part of the problem, on behalf of businesses is part of the problem, is encouraging more debt the answer? It remains to be seen, but common sense might lead you to argue against the Fed as to what negative rates might accomplish in the long run. What will they really do? Punish savers? Is that what we want to do? Would they lead to a nation higher in debt? And what happens then? Do we just borrow and borrow to the end of time? Is there not an end game to massive, increasing, ever-increasing debt? There are many more questions, indeed, than answers. The Fed, truthfully, can make all the money it wants. Doesn't have to fly in cargo planes. The Feds now just push a button that Venezuela has to fly in cargo planes. I don't know, maybe they haven't figured out the print button yet. I thought there was a print button on every keyboard. Ha! Huh. That's a joke. I got another joke I just wrote. I'm not going to tell you, though. People say my jokes aren't any good. Here's a good joke for you. There was a magic shop on the corner where I was growing up, and one day it just disappeared. Did you laugh? Okay, wasn't that funny? So with interest rates near zero, if we go negative, is it going to help? If you get an interest rate zero loan, would you borrow more? You still got to pay the money back. If you put your money in the bank and they penalize you 2 cents on the dollar, would you not put your money in the bank and go spend it even though you don't want to spend it at zero? Only time will tell if the consumer is willing to take on more debt should more money be made available. But we may already be at the point where no matter how much money is available to borrow, people just won't borrow any more of it. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. you're live on the air with KVMR. Hello? Oh, let's see where I can get you here. Probably have to get Steve in here again. Let's see. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Can you hear me? I'm good, how are you?
Well, I'm here, so I'm good. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I just called to tell you a joke while I had the commercial running. Had the music running.
Well, if it's a clean joke, if it's a clean joke.
Oh, yeah, it's a clean joke.
But it's got to be short. You're on the air.
It's short. Two good. Nuts were walking down the road.
Yes.
One was assaulted.
One was a what? Assaulted. Oh,
one was assaulted.
That's bad. That's real bad. Thanks for calling,
hey,
darling.
Bye.
You're live on the air.
Hi, Mark. Love your show.
Well, I appreciate that. I love you.
Long-time listener, and my question for you is, what happened to gold and silver? Why is it the gold silver plummet while gold stayed stable? That was what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next question would be, what's your feeling about what's going to happen in the next year or so?
Well, take it off the air? Okay, sounds good. Well, okay, so let's take gold or silver first. You know, gold can be regarded as a flight to safety currency, and gold and silver necessarily take two different roles, in my opinion, in investing. Silver is an industrial metal, okay? It also is used as a form of, you know, inflation protection by some, but it's an industrial metal, so... We've seen commodities across the board get hammered. Soybeans and coffee, those are commodities. Silver is one of them. So silver just kind of paralleled what the rest of the commodities did. Even though the stock market was taken off, people that buy and sell silver in massive quantities sold it off with commodities, is my likely guess. The fact that gold and silver diverged, they didn't diverge a lot. Gold, you know, silver came down, you know, 12 bucks or whatever it was. 14 bucks. I know where it went. And gold came down from 1900 to close to 1100 or somewhere in there. Since gold was regarded as a commodity, of course, it probably followed the commodity sector down. But gold was also a flight to safety currency. And when you see the stock market run in the last 5-6 years, well, there's not much need for a flight to safety currency in the mind of people that sold gold. And so everybody thought, well, we're going to see a lot of inflation because all this money being printed. We didn't see that. Indeed, commodities came crashing down. So gold grabbed onto the tail of the commodity bull, and down it went. And people didn't really see a need for a flight to safety currency like gold is considered by some to be. So they sold it off as well. So that gives the answer to that. Now, what's going to happen in the future? Well, nobody can tell you what's going to happen in the future. Okay, it's going to go one of three ways. We're either going to see inflation, deflation, or stagnation. Now, that doesn't help you much. Stopped watch is right twice a day. And if I knew which way it was going to go, I would tell you. And then I'd be heavily invested and sell the farm. But I can't tell you which way it's going to go. So basically, I can answer that and by saying you must stick to the, you know, a certain version of the modern portfolio theory, the MPT, which is diversification in all things, which means not just stocks. If the stock market goes down, all you got stocks, you're going down with it. So, you know, diversification, you know, could include real estate. It could include, you know, precious metals. It could include equities. It could include bonds. It could include cash. You know, cash is an investment. Cash doesn't go anywhere, but in a down market, you're going to be glad it didn't go anywhere. You know, you could overseas real estate, whatever. You buy 10,000 pounds of Tabasco sauce. That'll never go down in value. It'll go rotten. So diversification in all things, and in my opinion, does not mean having your entire wealth in the stock market, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that. And if you knew the market was going to go up, which nobody does, then the common area of thinking is you want to be in equities because they go up when the market goes up. If the market is going to go down, you want to be in cash because cash doesn't go down. So knowing, seeing as we don't know which way it's going to go, then what would that tell you to do? Maybe consider split? Maybe? I don't know. I see a lot of portfolios that are 70, 80, 90% in equities. So is that a split? Not necessarily so. Is that diversified? Some may argue against it. You know, use our common sense. We don't know which way it's going to go. I could show you 100 letters that would convince you the market is going to go to 30,000. I could show you 100 newsletters that tell you that. And I could show you 100 more that say this thing's going to 10,000. The only thing that proves is nobody knows where it's going to go. That's what it proves. So if that's the case, I can't tell you where it's going to go, then I would be diversified. Everybody has a different opinion of diversification. I have mine. I would also say that stop losses. Stop out when you reach a certain percentage, in my opinion, is prudent. And if you don't use one or advisors don't use a stop out, in my opinion, that is not prudent. Because if you're losing money, you ain't making it. So you see a market go down 40% and your portfolio drops 5%, you shouldn't be upset because you utilize correct stop loss procedures. If you can't stomach any losses, you should not be in the market. People are in the market in hopes of making more money. If you're willing to admit that, then you must admit to the fact that you are also willing to lose money. It goes both ways. But at least in an up market, you don't necessarily have to put a stop on the way up. If you're making money, why would you sell? Right? Maybe to take a profit. But I don't see anybody panic selling when the market's running. Do you? Market's running. I think I'm going to sell everything I got. There might be a reason for that, but it's not because the market is running. Unless you think it was going to run the other way. But we're talking about if the market is running up, then a stop loss would not be executed. If the market is falling, then a certain percentage, whether it be 3%, 5%, 10%, 15%, or 20%, stop loss stops you out, gets you out. You may miss a run back up, but better to miss a run back up and get out with a 10% loss or a 5% loss or a 2% loss than ride it down to a 40 or 50% loss. So I'm a firm believer. I exercise stop losses, man. Well, my personal portfolio, yeah. But, you know, I'm diversified. That's all I can tell you. And so I do not own 100% equities, nor would I ever do that. So where would we go from here? Well, I think I just answered that question, right? I think I just answered that question. We don't know where we're going to go from here. The Dow, to me, doesn't look like it's in an all-out bull mode. And as of today, it doesn't look like it's in an all-out crash mode. It's flat today. It's down 55. So we're going to just have to watch it. I always say I'm watching the market so you don't have to. That's what I do. You watch the markets. I watch the markets so you don't have to. You can if you want. But that's why I'm here. So you've been listening to show 227. Where do we go from here on your community radio station, wherever that happens to be in the United States? And I have to remember to remind you, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on money matters are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this radio station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Feel free to contact the program director at the radio station for questions about the show or call during show hours when I'm on 530-265-9555. My name is Mark Cunabrudi, wishing you all the best. God bless. And remember, money isn't the most important thing in your life. It's your friends, your family, your health, your relationships, your spirituality. and your love for your fellow man. And that concludes another edition. Have a great day. This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.
A dog.